Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Thanks again for joining us here in Circles of Change, everyone. Four live guests today calling back to the East Coast. First up is Bruce Frankel. Bruce, how are you this morning?
I'm great. How are you, Zara?
Just couldn't be better. Let me give a brief introduction for those who might not familiar with my once-a-month frequent broadcast partner. Bruce is author of the new book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life, that spotlights the lives of 12 unique individuals. He's also was the co-writer of World War II, History's Greatest Conflict in Pictures, which was a New York Times bestseller. Bruce's career, of course, spans a variety of journalism roles, editor, publisher, and writer, indeed, for USA Today. And he is a graduate of Sarah Lawrence College, later in life with a master's in poetry. And then his own life transition brought him on that journey to write that book where we oftentimes focus on what should I do with the rest of my life. So every segment, Bruce, you take us deeper into some of the tougher topics relating to aging, but in a celebrative way. And you wanted to anchor us with a section today we're calling the poetics, not the politics of aging.
Yeah, actually, it's the poetics of aging, but with some thoughts about the politics of aging.
Okay.
And then I began thinking about this after I was invited to listen to some people who are organizing a conference called the Poetics of Aging Conference that's going to take place on November 16th through 19th in San Francisco. And the mission of the Poetics for Aging Conference is to counter the belief that aging is analogous to decline and disease, and to create a climate where people share their awareness and create expressions. They've got a very expansive, humanistic, creative, and in fact poetic vision. And so I began thinking a lot about that, as well as there's also something called the Age March that's occurring by chance in San Francisco on October 1st to celebrate age and to end age discrimination. So the flower children are becoming revolutionaries for a longer and later blooming.
Isn't that the truth? And for those of us that are in their tow, because that's really what this comes down to, of course, is this anchoring of those of us in the baby boom generation that are just doggone refusing that we're not young. But at the same time, perhaps being blind to the realities of what we need to prepare for, and more importantly, how we can help those that are preceding us lead the active and appropriate lives, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a double-edged sword, and I think we've lost sight sometimes in our urge to remain young. We've created perhaps a problem in that we, as a generation, baby boomers have, and our society in general avoids the issue of aging, avoids aging, and we shunt people off, and we've created a really terrible dynamic in many ways, in which we've created a system that is very costly, and unfortunately also not very humanistic and doesn't really value the worth of aging or the possibilities of aging. And it's hard to untie these two things, because really one affects the other. But we have to begin now, because the dangers of not doing so are really quite enormous. We're at our crossroads at the moment. We're in the midst of what might be considered a perfect storm. We've got a global economic crisis in which people have lost, across the world, have lost tremendous amounts of value. Unemployment rates are high. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we've got this cresting age wave.
So Bruce, you mentioned the system is broke. And so we're speaking here not just of, can we provide, you know, the appropriate amount of Medicare, Social Security, et cetera, but it's also the societal system that in days prior, you know, the elderly, and again, we'll speak to the Western culture, were revered, were included in the family dynamics. We even lived in closer proximity to our elderly versus that distancing, that lack of social connectivity.
Yeah, I mean, it. You know, we see it very vividly if anyone ever goes and visits someone in a traditional hospital model type of facility for elders. You see it, you know, with excruciating clarity that we've created this society in which we have, in order to protect ourselves possibly, shunted people off to, and rather than valuing the worth that people have, the intrinsic value of a life and the value that elders in particular can bring through wisdom, through being there, you know, whether through paid or unpaid work, their importance to our society and culture has created this separation is really hurting us both spiritually, I believe, and economically, and it injures the people who have to live in these facilities.
But, you know, one would say, though, that the progressive changes that have happened in nursing homes or elder care facilities or other options that are available today are there. Of course, they're only there for those who can afford them in many regard. But the onset of long-term care, for example, that allows more caring for in the home. But yet, what I think we're saying, though, that's necessary, but it's not sufficient when we're looking at, you know, outworks exposure and engagement with our elderly in the community.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's true. There's certainly been some progress. I don't deny that. And actually, there's a lot of progress in many areas. As I began to think about the politics of aging and so forth this week, and, you know, so much of our discussion ends up getting focused on whether there's going to be continuation of money to fund the Social Security Trust or Medicare and so forth, when really larger issues at work. But at any rate, I've been thinking about three innovators in this elderly housing field, the elderly care field, and they're one of the Nader Shahbahangi is kind of the Poetics of Aging conference is his brainchild, but there's also Dr. Bill Thomas, who has created something called the Eden Alternative, and Tim Carpenter out in Burbank, who has created the Burbank's Arts Colony. And each of these men have been re-envisioning and reimagining how to deliver, not really deliver so much as create communities where people live healthier, happier, more productive, physically active lives. And
now, I know, if I recall my own reading, that Tim came from the healthcare field, right?
That's correct. He was involved. He started out wanting as a journalist, but ended up in marketing, I believe, for a period of time. And each of these men, Nader Shahbahangi, Bill Thomas, and Tim Carpenter, had epiphanies when they were confronted with the realities and of the way in which people were being cared for. And Tim saw the expense and the waste. And he grew up in northern New York near one of the famous art colonies.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was surrounded, watched people who were engaged with each other around creative things. And he had this brilliant idea of creating communities that through the art of active aging could change the way people think and age. And he created this community of lifelong learning, basically using a kind of college model and bringing in people who actually are professional professors and so forth and teaching. And for his at the Burbank Senior Arts Colony, they've had just such exciting things that have happened, including there's just, you walk into the place and it's a thriving arts colony. Mm-hmm. These are not people who before necessarily were artists.
And, of course, this brings a direct connect with what you found and what was revealed through your book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life?
Absolutely. And, you know, that we don't know the possibilities of really, you know, when we reach a certain stage of life, it's almost like when we were going off to college we opened up the college catalog and there were all these possibilities. Well, in fact, it can be the same way when we reach a slightly later stage in life.
And by the way, that could be, you know, after 45, after 55, 65, or 75, right? It's at a transition point where you can turn to something to re-energize you.
Absolutely, and find new meaning. And we know that, you know, it isn't money, ultimately. We all need money to survive, but it isn't money that makes people feel happy about their lives or healthy. It's that engagement. And one of the most remarkable things in Tim Carpenter's work, and they've created 20 communities in California that now house about 3,000 people, and they have found in their studies that just in those 20 communities that house 3,000 people, they save in costs for the society about $18 million a year, because people, when they're happier and they're engaged,
right,
guess what? They don't need to as much health care. They are more, they become more independent. And it doesn't matter if they weren't before, they become. And so they've also got a lot of physical activity. If you just sit people in a room and you take away their sense of worth, which is really what Nader is talking about re-establishing, and you take away people's sense of value of what it is to be a purse, then you're, you know, setting up a system in which decline is inevitable and the costs of that decline are enormous.
So Bruce, if I recall some of the things I've read that really made, you know, were very disturbing, is that some of these thought leaders really have argued that we're driven by a fear of aging, and that's why we've been separating the young from the old. Do you think that?
Yeah, I do. I think it's very insidious. You know, whether we're driven there by advertising or by our own internal, by something that's programmed into us. I think that, you know, Bill Thomas, who's really an apostle of elderhood, speaks very dynamically to this point, that because we're in such hot pursuit of anti-aging, we fail to focus on the value of interdependent, intergenerational living. I mean, as you said earlier, you know, traditionally, elders improve the quality of life of people, and they still do. You know, there was a report out, I can't remember the billions of dollars in New York State alone that are saved because elders are so important to providing unpaid care, child care. But, you know, it's not...
Or let alone even when we look at companies that are making decisions on how they can attract their retirees to come back even in part-time capacities, and you realize that's where the institutional wisdom, the best practices, and the deep knowledge of the product and services are. And so to be able to, I have done it many times in my corporate life, set them up almost like the lifeguards with the younger employees' desks in closer proximity to them so they can just have that conversation that says, oh yeah, you're right, we probably shouldn't go do it that way.
Well, I mean, you probably have a much closer and better perspective on that, and I would love to hear more actually of that, because I think one of the real critical issues is that people, as we know, the boomer generation, which is turning 65 at the rate of 8,000 a day now.
That
generation doesn't want to retire, can't retire, isn't going to retire, and they're pursuing work in well into their 70s. But we don't seem to be making much of an effort in terms of creating space for them in the workplace. And this could have terrible consequences. And, you know, there's a tremendous amount of creativity. People, we're stuck with the notion of 65 mm-hmm. as being old, but that really may not be the reality for people.
Well, I guarantee that, other parents, which my husband and I are in their 80s, and watch my mother pick up golf at age 81, you know, and that, you know, lo and behold, she's off doing her own variety of volunteer work extraordinaire. And the same with my in-laws and the things that they've given back, whether it be their creative artwork and sharing those, that with my children, by the way, who most likely will both pursue art school at some point in time because of that skip generation influence. Whereas my husband and I are engineers, that you see that kind of dynamic and that possibility. The whole concept of elderhood, I think you also used a word earlier, the age wave. Give our listeners that sense, the statistics. I mean, it's striking, you know, within 20 years.
Yeah, it's staggering. By right now, the plus 20, the 65 plus generation accounts for 13% of the population in this country. By the year 2030, it's projected will go from 39 million to 72 million, or 20% of the population will be 65 plus. And this, of course, has enormous consequences for us in terms of housing, transportation, employment, and so forth. And there's very little, you know, it's an important concern, let's say that. There's no reason to be alarmist about it. There are lots of things that are that individuals are doing, I think, more than government, frankly.
Well, and for our listeners, by the way, who are oriented towards a career sector, regardless of your age or stage in life, recognize this smells of huge possibilities, right? The idea of creating products, of providing transportation mechanisms, you know, let alone we know the burgeoning opportunities in long-term care and in-home care that's opening up on a positive venue, wonderful career fields that can link across these generations.
You're absolutely right. It actually, what you just said reminded me very much of what Peter Drucker, the great management guru, used to say, which is see the opportunity, starve the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I like that, starve the problem. Well, Bruce, as you continue your own work, you know, with your book, What Should I Do with the Rest of My Life? And I know several of the stories we've covered on this show that individuals have really done extraordinary things over the age of 60. I think what you're saying here in this upcoming conference, the Poetics of Aging in San Francisco in November, and for our listeners interested, some of the names we've mentioned we'll bring up on the website, is this is a wave, a movement of absolute necessity. It isn't just about our political, you know, representatives dealing with what we have to do about medical, you know, Medicare, Social Security, and so on. And we really need to look for that kind of advocacy across all the different stratas of our culture, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really crucial that we change the game, that we change the conversation, that mm-hmm, we change
right.
the metaphors, and in order to change the values, the value statement that we now have, we have to turn away from the kind of I don't know how to characterize what goes on in Washington right now, but that focus that only looks at a very small part of the story.
You bet. Exactly. It's really important. Well, great. Bruce, thanks for joining us. The Art of Active Aging. I like that. We'll continue this conversation if we reach your show. Thanks for joining us again, Bruce, here on Circles of Change.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Have a great day.
You bet.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.